Welcome to another episode of We the People Radio.
Hi.
I have a feeling it's going to be an episode.
Oh, no, it's going to be wonderful.
My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Huh.
Yeah.
Go figure.
Yeah, we have a sponsor today. It's Pape Machinery. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. They're our full-line John Deere ag and turf dealer. And tis the season to get out there and get your yard taken care of and mow your fields. Go by and see them. They got all the equipment you need to get that done. They're also a steel dealer now. They have everything from chainsaws to weed trimmers. They got it all for you down there. And also, as it warms up, get ready for PG&E to shut your power off. They got generators ready to go. So go by and see them. Or give them a call at 226-9226 or get them on the web at PapeMachinery.com.
Or you can you can do that.
Or
Bill's so predictable. Or you can go to WeThePeopleRadio.us and they're right there on the front page with all the links.
Got a little link there to them.
You can go
right by there and check them out.
Okay, so today is April 26th, 2020. We're still in plus or minus pandemic land, although there are more cars out. I don't know what that means exactly, but
Traffic was kind of heavy today.
We will find out. Our guest today is Eureka Young, but I need 5 seconds because my computer didn't open like it should have.
You're not ready?
In a timely fashion.
You're not ready?
No, I wasn't ready. I was screwing around. That hardly ever happens, too, because I'm so punctual.
As hard as I try.
I'm so punctual, said no one ever. I guess I should tell people at the top of our page at We the People Radio. So you go to WeThePeopleRadio.us. Something weird going on with my microphone. You can see shows on veterans, South Africa, China, Islam, environmentalism, marijuana, and those are all tabbed for you. And then the archives go back 10 years. But we tried to kind of coalesce those shows so that you could go through them without doing a lot of searching. The list we've been doing on China started in November of 2018. So I think you'd learn a lot if you start at the beginning and kind of go through the programs. They're commercial free. They don't cost you anything to listen either. And you MP3 files, you can, send them to a friend or do whatever you want with them. So there you go. That's my promo for the day. Oh, next week we are talking about we're going back to kind of a veterans issue, and this guy's really interesting. I found him on a thing, oddly enough, from the VA, an announcement that came into my email, and he is a behavioral profiler. He was a sniper, and he's not behavioral profiling to sniper people. He did that already.
He was a sniper.
He stopped snipering.
He doesn't profile you. You're in the crosshairs.
He stopped snipering, and now he's doing behavioral profiling. But super interesting guy. Sounds really, really nice, and he'll be on with us next week. So back to this week. Our guest, Eureka Young, has been on with us before. Super interesting. Came to the United States from China as a college student in 1988, attended Eastern Michigan University in a small town east of Ann Arbor. After graduate school, he worked I'm going to skip that part. I'm sorry. I was getting into the weeds there. He works in real-time information processing after the search engine company was acquired by a UK-based company, which in turn was acquired by HP. Huh, imagine that. He currently works at a major financial services company. So a lot of times we have microbiologists on, we've got other people from China, but this will be a different viewpoint. And since 2012, he's provided research, analysis, and other services to private investors and not-for-profit organizations covering macroeconomic and geopolitical topics in U.S.-China relations. So always timely, and especially timely now. So we haven't spoken with you in, a month.
Yeah, not too long ago. Last time I was on your program, and one of your guest speakers, Dr. Chan, brought up the issue that WHO was misleading the world. And
wasn't that funny? And you were way ahead of the news there.
Right. Now, you're leading the news by by a month or two.
Yeah, Bill and I were sitting there, and that came out, on some news broadcast we were watching. We looked at each other, we're like, didn't we tell everyone that, 2 months ago?
They didn't believe us.
No, thanks, you guys, for keeping us ahead of the curve. So what are you hearing these days?
Yeah, I'm hearing bad things in China and how China is painting the United States is now like being swept, like swept out, and how they are doing a really good job because they covered up the numbers, right? They also allowed people to leave the country, and they prevented the WHO to give warnings to announce this as an international pandemic until like March. And so with all the effective work that they did in dragging the world down with the people of Wuhan who were the first who suffered the first wave attack, now they're claiming that they are probably the country that's leading the fight. And in so doing, although it was all celebrations and praises in China, but I think it got backfired, that policy. And not just here. I know people in the United States were angry, and we are seeing a lot of deaths, and especially those who defended freedom, defended the United States, defended our values, and the veterans. Many of them, they succumbed. Yeah, they came under the infection, and some families, they suffered tremendous loss. And I saw a picture saying, in the woods, it was really nice. They said it was a very serene and beautiful life into retirement. Now with this tragedy, hitting them. So here, we really need. It's time for us to think, we really need to defend America's values, and not just in this land. We need to defend far, and we need take a look at Asia, in Hong Kong, in all those countries and regions and areas where United States had been helping people since 70, 80 years ago, since the end of the World War II, had been helping these economies, a lot of Asian countries, their economy took off, and their people are changing into because of their the demand of their people. Many countries like South Korea, like Taiwan, they turned democratic, and that they are now like democracies, and it is really a time to defend all those who stand for freedom, and only by defending them who share the values that Americans all share, can we defend ourselves in this land of we call it that this land that has drawn people from all over the world to come over, and it has. And I have been calling it home for now, I think 30 years, and over 30 years. So that's just something that just came to my mind.
Well, it's interesting because when China first started telling people that, I think they started with the CIA did it, and then
the American troops took it over there.
It started with CIA. The CIA did it, and then everybody was kind of like, huh? And that didn't get much steam. And then they started with the American military. But that was in end of January or something. It's like, really, guys? I mean, they said they just did it. So I don't know. I would think they would be terrific liars, but I don't know. I think they dropped the ball on this one. Whoever was crafting the story, I think didn't do a very good job. When we come back, I would kind of like to know, just from your contacts that you have over there, if the people in China actually are believing most of this. I realize their communication is limited and they pretty much have one source, which is their government.
Well, and their ability to speak out is a little bit...
Well, they don't get to say anything, but I guess I'm just kind of curious how far you think the truth has penetrated inside China. So we are here with Eureka Young. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them? baby did a bad, bad thing.
What'd you do?
What made this time? All right, and I also forgot to say that you can also catch our show on KRDT Channel 23.7 Tuesday nights on the American Uncensored Television News Network. So that's also out there. Thanks to our friend Rick Trader for that. All right, so Eureka, what do you think about the whole propaganda campaign over there?
Yeah, the lies that the war is spun out one after another, right?
Yeah.
When they first came out, I believe a lot of Chinese, as far as I know, they did believe in this fabricated story that it was disseminated by U.S. special agents, by U.S. military personnel, and they gave vivid details about how these military athletes, how they were infected, how they were transported back, how they were hospitalized in China, and all the details of it. Then, until like now, they hit their number, and they were trying to cover up the severity in order to not to lose their grip on power. And now, when this when it started. Like impacting Iran, Italy, and France, Spain, and eventually United States. Now the overseas, like outside the border of China, the numbers are really like climbing. Now no one believed in that, right? They thought, how could U.S. athletes like disseminate the virus? And the United States did not even have masks on store to embrace this, like. The spread of the virus, of the Wuhan virus.
Right.
So now Chinese people no longer believe that. But then the government started spinning a new story, like saying it was leaked from United States labs. And that's how U.S. was like surprised.
Of course.
Wow. I'm like rubber, you're like glue, bounces off me, sticks to you.
Yeah, something like that.
Right.
Yeah, liar, liar, pants on fire.
Yeah. But these Chinese people, they got so used to watch like state-run media, and their foreign ministry spokesperson, when they answer questions, we saw how they are just spinning out like just lie after lie and after lie. There's no credibility whatsoever. But however, their audience, though, those spokespersons' audience, rather than international media, they wanted to talk things like how to fool Chinese people and how to make their superiors happy. So that's the main audience they're serving. So that's why even their diplomats were spinning this lie of athletes. They are stationed overseas. They knew all the reports. And I had to defend the United States. Like on one occasion, when my relatives started saying, no, don't tell me like China is covering up the numbers. We know a lot of things that you don't even know. First they said you're like disseminating virus here. Then they said, okay, it was leaked out from your labs. Then I told them, think about it. See, there are a lot of people in the United States, they're trying to impeach President Trump, right? So if there is something bad that the administration did, you think, like CNN or New York Times, like, wouldn't they be following up more tightly than you could in China? You couldn't even visit New York Times. You couldn't even walk.
Yeah, we have a fairly wide swath of anti-Trump media that probably would have covered that story.
Well, it begs the question, if, you know, they're telling all these lies and all these different stories, it makes you wonder why they're so afraid of the truth. What is it really that they are hiding? They know that they don't want to say, and they're going to throw all this false stuff out there.
Well, if the people in China, just out of curiosity, if they actually knew the truth, if the government said, hey, you know, we were doing an experiment on a lab, not that this is ever going to happen, but let's just say that they did admit that it got started in China, would the people in China turn on them? Would they be mad at them, or are they just kind of used to it?
No, they succumbed to the brutality of the regime. Even if it started in China, and now Chinese people knew that it started in China, but because of decades of nationalistic kind of brainwashing, and they would be really offended when I mentioned the term Wuhan virus. They thought it is kind of a stigma. It is kind of it's a shame that we are kind of picking up on Wuhan rather than being sympathetic to the plight of people in Wuhan. So the people, they didn't want to use the term Wuhan virus because of years of indoctrination by communist propaganda. And so I have to be more careful when I'm talking to them than I can be more free. While I'm talking to my colleagues here, to friends, I can be very freely just using it. If I say coronavirus, nobody's going to be concerned. If I say Wuhan virus, they know what I'm talking about. So I don't have to be really careful.
What if you call it the CCP virus? Is that, like, verboten?
Yeah. That's the... CCP virus is good. I think it's a good term. I'm not using that frequently, but I think it's a good term.
Well, because people don't know what it means, but I guess in China, if you said that and the people in China knew you said that, is that bad, like Wuhan virus? I mean...
They probably would be afraid because of Secretary General.
That's true.
Yeah, came to power.
They would pretend like they didn't hear you.
Power. And now, if I say that, they would feel like they are associated with somebody who is strongly like against the Communist Party, right? Which would, kind of put their life in danger and put their career.
I'm not destined to live in an authoritarian country because I don't have a very good filter.
Right, and
snap me out of
they have a program for that.
They'd snatch me off the street the second day I was there. Yeah, maybe the first.
Yes, and for Chinese, they once they know they now more or less know that it came out from Wuhan. The people traveled to Iran, so they know that, and some are worried that a lot of Russians got infected. And they are counting on Russia being like their ally in standing up against the United States. So now they are really worried, and they know it is them that spread the virus across the world. And now they want to focus on how the United. They want to pretend that they are victim, right? They were being discriminated on the international stage, and a lot of foreign countries, like European countries, because they sent defective face masks and the testing kits to Europe, and just like a day or two ago, Canada sent a freight freight cargo over there trying to pick up 1 million face masks. They turned out all defective.
Oh, great.
And they were the crew were told to leave because those who are stationed in the airport who were supposed to be delivering the equipment, the package to the Canadian crew, they heard that in Canada, in North America, and everybody is kind of a suspect, right, could be carrying the Wuhan virus, though they're not allowed to call it Wuhan virus. And so they did not want the crew member to check into a hotel. They wanted to leave right away, although they didn't. They weren't able to try to, since they flew over there, they couldn't bring back the supplies. They wanted to find alternatives. Right? They're working very hard. They have Canadian people's health and safety in their mind, but they were told that you had to leave, so they came back empty-handed. That's how it is.
Another story I heard was that early on, Italy and France and some of these European countries donated tons of PPE to China to help them in Wuhan. And now with the shortage, China is now selling those same supplies back to the countries that gave them to them. The same exact supplies.
Yeah, like they bought it in China, they went to went to like Italy. Then Italy donated them back,
mm-hmm.
and then China sold them back to Italy a second time.
Yes, Yeah.
Yes, with the same printing, same packaging.
Exact same packaging, yeah. That's got to make you feel good.
That's painful.
Yeah, when it came out, people were shocked. But after that shipment, then people realized that they were lucky to get the original shipment back, even if they paid an exorbitant price, because subsequent shipments
were
of inferior quality. They were not usable. And they were putting people's life really in danger because the testing kits, they're of only like a 20% accuracy ratio. And so when you are tested negative, you don't know whether you are negative. When tested positive, I cannot be certain whether I am or not. Yeah. And people could be like released from hospital.
So if it was the same stuff you got back the second time, it was...
at least you knew you were getting the real
deal. It was
deal.
Extra good at twice the price. Jeez. Yeah. Some of that is just really hard to wrap your mind around because you just think, I don't know, who would do that? But I guess they're kind of pros there. I'm curious what your information is on how this relates to SARS, because I think most of us weren't paying really close attention to SARS maybe, and I guess I'm just kind of interested on how that connected. We have to take a really quick break, though, however, before we do that. And we will be right back with our guest, Eureka Young. You're listening to We the People Radio. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Songs that start with bad today. Maybe it's just because I started at the top of the alphabet, but anything that starts with bad, I'm like, ooh, that'd be a good one. Just in case radio isn't enough for you, We the People is now on KRDT, channel 23.7 on Tuesday nights in Reading, the Reading area, I should say, on the American Uncensored Television News Network. There you go. Okay, so, Eureka, what do you think about that we were talking about right before we... unceremoniously cut you off.
SARS 17 years ago.
Yeah.
I think there were Chinese reports a year or two after SARS outbreak that it came out from Chinese labs. So there were reports. I didn't follow up too closely on that. I thought it wouldn't have an impact, like, with our current...
The only reason I ask is because we've had several people who have told us that China's purpose for sort of becoming a major player in the WHO was because during SARS it made them look bad.
Yes. Yep. And it doubled its effort, maybe quadrupled its effort to try to take control of WHO. So I believe... a year or two. In the year of the SARS outbreak, it was 2003, and they tried to lift, back then, the regulation of like announcing a pandemic, announcing whether a country was should be locked down or should be declared like a disease area. So there were different rules. In 2005 or so, there came out new rules. And even prior to 2005, China wanted that categorization to be lifted very quickly because it wanted its economy back on track. So after 2005, with the new rule, they installed Margaret Chan to be to be the secretary general over there, director general over there, and she was like in charge of WHO for over a decade. And then she like installed the current director general, Tedros, in place. So, and at the beginning of this outbreak of Wuhan virus, they were China's major concern was not to be declared like a country, like with a lot of people. In fact, that's why they want to cover up the outbreak and hold the number down. And they really resisted United States banning air traffic. And they threatened South Korea, and they threatened Taiwan, and they threatened a lot of countries where they had enough leverage, like Iran, to not to sever any travel connections. And that's how it spread the virus all across the world. And I think another threat of development was, in addition to its economic concern, it also started developing in biotechnology field. It started developing this kind of a genome, like a sequencing. I don't know the exact term of these things, but it's for sequencing the genomes and trying to find man-made virus that only they would have the vaccines for. So then this...
That's a neat trick.
Yep, this leads to those like labs, like P4 labs, P3, P2 labs in China. And I'm glad all departments, all levels of U.S. administration, now they are pursuing that. I heard like a spokesperson from DOD, I heard like Secretary Pompeo, and I heard like President Trump in his press briefing, he mentioned like we are conducting our own investigation while China is investigating that under pressure of the United States. Though their foreign ministry spokesperson denied that. They didn't even want to acknowledge they're investigating. But from U.S. officials, we learned clearly that United States communicated in most clear terms to Chinese leadership that we need transparency. We need to know. We need the earliest cases. We need the first results of those who tested positive. So, but China is hiding. I believe their labs are doing that. And now the question is not whether they're doing it. It's whether they intentionally leaked it or it is unintentional.
Right.
Trump.
Right. Now, that you know what you said about developing a virus and only they have the...
Yeah.
The cure to. I mean, when you think about that, that's a pretty frightening thought that they could unleash something that their people would not be affected by.
Just a tiny bit of biological warfare there.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty scary. When do you think, realistically, when do you think this virus hit the United States? Because there's a lot of talk now that it could have hit here as early as November. Do you have any information on that?
I do not have direct information, but I think, if along the line of biotech supremacy, that's what People's Liberation Army, PLA in short, China's military, they have been pursuing something called biotech supremacy for over a decade. And I haven't heard much about they're doing that as early as November. But with this, I do hear rumors among Chinese and among those with connections in Taiwan. They are saying why Taiwan did better, because they were on the front line. They knew they just had their presidential election. They knew the communist regime is sabotaging Taiwan's democracy. Mm-hmm. So they are on high alert. And everybody from people like in Far East, they expected that when the outbreak somehow got transmitted over to the United States, whether via Italy or France or Spain or Britain or Canada, the fatality rate wouldn't be this high, because it's after each human transmission, the severity would drop. But since it did not drop, so there are rumors. I haven't heard in the United States. I didn't have many contacts here. But I do hear from people in Asia that United States, they really need to stay on high alert and they need to test food supplies, need to test water systems to make sure not just a guard against this virus, but against any biotech like weaponry like being deployed against general public in the United States. Mm-hmm. This theory of biotech supremacy came into being 10, 11 years after this asymmetric warfare doctrine became vogue in 1999. In 1999, there was this asymmetric warfare theory propagated by a general, I believe, in Air Force. His name, General Chao Liang. He taught in the their defense university for the People's Liberation Army, and he figured that China is probably no match against the United States if, like, how many, like, aircraft carriers China has had, right? It had none. And how many, like, airplanes, which generation, like, the fifth generation for the United States, maybe, like, two, three generations China, like, was behind. But he started this idea of asymmetric warfare to attack United States electric power grid and to attack like United States, which did occur. It was like in early 2000s. There was this huge power outage, but somehow it didn't trace to Chinese military. Then how to attack like U.S. population with biological weapons. Then 10 years into that, 10 years later, around the year 2010, there is a senior colonel. His name is Senior Colonel Guo Jiwei. He published a leading, it's Xinhua Press. Xinhua is China's top news agency. He published his book. And General Chao, the guy who first came up with this asymmetrical warfare doctrine, he wrote a preface to this biotech supremacy book by the senior major Guo. And in that, they want to tilt the balance of power by deploying biochemical weapons. So it had been pursuing, PLA had been pursuing this for a long time, but we heard very little. And the only place, the official place I heard about United States media talking about it, yeah, two places, they cross-reference each other. One is Washington Times. There is a gentleman, Bill Gertz, who has deep connections with the U.S. intelligence community. He wrote about how China was violating the chemical and the biochemical weaponry treaty. There's an international treaty in 1980s, how China signed that and is violating that. And his research was quoted by a senior DOD advisor, Michael Pillsbury, in a well-known book, 100-Year Marathon, about PLA and the Communist Party's two bicentennial goals. One bicentennial was 1921 was when CCP was founded. So 2021, which is only a few months from now, less than a year from now, is the 100th anniversary of CCP. And the other 100th year anniversary is 2049, since Communist Party took over China in 1949. So they have this two centennial goals. By the first 100th anniversary, they're thinking about like taking over Taiwan, right? Then the next 100-year like mark, by 2049, they're going to surpass the United States. And if they couldn't do it with like in outer space, with information technology, with nuclear weaponry, with like Air Force, they would try to do it, like seeking alternative ways. So they
biological warfare, maybe. Yeah, alternative ways. That sounds kind of creepy. I'd be curious to know what the people in China are being told about that kind of stuff when we come back. I'm always interested in what the world looks like from their vantage point, because I know it's extremely different from what we see. And so we will be back in just 2 minutes. Got to take a little break and celebrate a little capitalism here. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Sure, the CCP dislikes our choice of music, which thrills me to no end. So you're listening to We the People, and you can find us on channel 23.7. I don't know how you tune in 23.7. I haven't had.
You turn your rabbit ears just a little bit to the right.
I know, and there's a trick to that.
One to the left.
Every time I say it, I'm like, what does that mean? Yeah. Anyway, it's Tuesday nights. I know what that means, and it's on the American Uncensored Network here in Reading. So he asked me to keep announcing it, see, so I have to leave it right on my screen so I see it all the time. Otherwise, you know, I rabbit trail and I start talking about other stuff. So, Eureka, what I'm curious about, like the people in Taiwan, the people in Hong Kong, Singapore, all those folks, do they hear what we hear? Or are they kind of in a bubble too?
They do. They do hear what we hear. And they are coping with this pandemic better, because they are aware how Beijing lied during SARS and how they're going to continue to lie throughout. They lied at the outbreak of Wuhan virus. They are lying today about zero infection confirmed cases in China.
Yeah.
And they will continue to spin lies. So they know about all that. So they're being very careful, and they are doing a pretty they're doing a good job.
Oh, that's good. That gives them a fighting chance, anyway.
Speaking of that, what have you heard anything?
You read my mind.
Concrete about the actual numbers?
Yeah, that's what I was
ask. Of people that have died in Wuhan, because we're getting, you know, mixed stories about that.
Well, it all of a sudden stopped. The count stopped after they brought in the incinerators, which was nothing short of super creepy.
Yeah. And I saw only calculations. I do not have a direct contact with those officials. They stayed away from me. I have a college roommate, and it's very close. We're both in computer science. We're both, in that department. And not only that department, also that small subdivisions, both in computer science and engineering. And I believe that person worked in the government of Hubei province. Hubei's capital city is Wuhan, so they are kind of working in that area. But I did not stay in touch with them so as not to bring any trouble to those folks back there. And so I can only gather from public sources. And they added up these numbers, and some Chinese news media, they are quite, they're they are quite honest because they want to earn the reputation. Probably that would be associated with both like integrity and as well as revenue, because people in the matter of in such a matter of life and then death, people want facts. So there's some media outlets within China. So they sent their reporters to Wuhan the day when people were allowed to pick up urns, right, ashes. And so they went there and they saw a kind of a freight, a cargo, not a bus, but a kind of a vehicle. The reporter talked to the driver, and the driver said, "I'm delivering 2,500 like ash boxes today, and I already did as many yesterday. So that was already 5,000, even in 2 days. And people are scheduled to go there to pick up their loved ones' ashes, like for a week or more."
Wow.
So that was only in one crematory site.
Right.
And
right.
Yeah, there are eight or so. That is probably one of the major or medium or large-sized ones. Then multiply 8 or 10. So the reporter came up with these numbers, and in the among Chinese journalists and China watchers, they thought that the number was like to be on the conservative side would be 50,000. But then there are those who the entire family got wiped out, and then no one would be going there. And then there are those who are from out of town. And back then, Wuhan lockdown wasn't lifted, so those families wouldn't be notified. And then based on how fast they could burn dead body and dead bodies, and also their live accounts with first-hand witnesses saying people weren't even dead. They were still like struggling.
Oh.
Then they got thrown into the body bag, and then they were like shipped over for cremation. So there were many sad stories, and the number, other people's estimate, the most conservative was in the above 50,000, but people thought it would be 100,000 or more in Wuhan alone. Then Hubei province in the nearby, the numbers would also be quite significant, because people travel. It is like people, a little bit similar to New York City, only that in China, when you go visit relatives, you don't check into a hotel. You stay with your relatives, like siblings or son-in-laws. So they visited Wuhan, and it was during China's, like prior to China's Lunar New Year.
Oh,
so people were traveling back to the countryside and coming to Wuhan. So there were a lot of traveling. So nearby cities and towns in Wuhan also suffered huge casualty. But those numbers we did not even have. Those honest, more transparent media outlets, they didn't have enough people to cover those cities, because it's not easy to travel from Wuhan to a nearby city. You have to spend like 14 days like before you would be able to talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this kind of isolation period. And so that was Wuhan. But then on the other hand, in other cities of China, I think the numbers were indeed low. They were not as low as the government announced. They were very low. So the first during the first outbreak, the the majority of people who died, they died in Wuhan and Hubei province. And in other cities, I have relatives and friends, and I heard the cases of someone were infected, people were infected, but those close to us, I didn't hear anyone who died. But now the problem is there is this second outbreak, because China, before we came to this 12:45 break, you were thinking about how Chinese people were viewing this and how they thought about like what the government told them, what the government warfare like strategy and all that. A lot of Chinese, they were pressured to go back to work. So is the government. they are running out of their foreign reserve is running low, and the jobless rate was like skyrocketing. It is worse than the United States, as bad as we are here. They were much worse because they depended very much on export business. There were three pillars. One was the infrastructure. One was the construction for high-rise buildings, residential and commercial. Then the other is export. Now all the three pillars are kind of collapsed, and the people were out of job, and so they had to go back. And with people going back to work, with kids going back to school, there are cases where kids died. Then parents took to the streets to protest. No matter what the government did to adults, they would always endure. They would not even rebel, or they would not even protest. But when the government took the lives of their kids away, they would take to the streets.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think that's the same thing everywhere. You know, you can go ahead and work. It's almost like siblings too. You know, we can beat each other up, but if the kid down the street slugs your brother, it's like, oh, all bets are off.
Yep, we started seeing. So there is this imminent threat of a second outbreak. I'm not sure how severe it is going to be. It also impacts bordering provinces. On the north, the province that borders Heilongjiang province borders Russia. China closed the checkpoints, the border passes entirely down. They coordinate, I believe, with the Russian government. Mm. They probably conceded. Economically, they made economic concessions. Their rumors were saying that they were buying crude oil, paying exorbitant price, 10 times the world market going rate they're paying Russian government.
Oh, wow.
So as Russians wouldn't force China to open the border, to deport close to 1 million or so Chinese nationals over there.
Brutal. We will be right back. We have another hour with our guest, Eureka Young. We are talking about China. And you can catch all of this at wethepeopleradio.us. Of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
Who's our sponsor, Bill?
Well, we have a sponsor today on
really?
This hour. Yeah, it's Pape Machinery.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
What do they do?
Well, they're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Thank you for asking. And they handle everything ag and turf, tractors, mowers, tillers, you name it. And they've got it. Also, they're a steel dealer now. You can go by and get your weed eaters, and chainsaws, and hedge trimmers, all that stuff they have in stock, and also your Honda generators. You can go by. That season's right around the corner, and they're stocked up and ready to go. Go by and see them at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, or you can give them a call at 226-9226 or get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Boom.
Boom. There you go.
Yeah, and for heaven's sakes, if you have a lot of grass near your house, there's a house at the end of the street, and I think in the last week it's grown 2 feet.
Yeah.
Two feet.
Get it cut.
And it's green, so you could cut it now, but I'm guessing in about a week it'll be all brown and you'll light a fire.
Well,
so
about the 1st of June, you're all done mowing. You got to put your mower away.
Oh, hey, hot tip here. Here's a little inside dope. Whatever you do, if you live near Forest Service land, don't light a fire because word on the street is the regional forest guy out of Vallejo has instructed the Forest Service that they can only have one person per vehicle. this fire season.
The corona threat.
Yeah. They can only have one person per vehicle, so wildland fire, you're going to have like 400 cars. I don't know.
Yeah, everybody be walking there in their own car.
They'll be walking for days.
So a fire truck can't wheel up with 10 guys in it anymore. We're going to have 10 cars.
Anyway, there's a lot of stupidity going on out there. And so,
parking assistant.
Do not put yourself in danger.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us, back to seriousness. Today is April 26, 2020, just to give it some context. Still playing footsie with the Wuhan virus and all that goes with it. But businesses are reopening. People are getting annoyed, and they're ready to go back to work. And places that don't have big outbreaks are wondering why their hospital is closed with no humans in it. And rural hospitals are going broke because they have no humans in them. So they're waiting for people who are sick, but they're not there, so they need to reopen to normal stuff. I've got people, you know, I think we're all speaking with all these folks. They had a knee surgery scheduled. They had all these things scheduled. Spoke to a dentist here in our town who, after being closed now for 5 weeks, 6 weeks, he said when May starts, he will be over 5,000 dental appointments behind. He has 26 hygienists and 3 dentists that work in there, and he said we're over 5,000 appointments behind, and you can't just push out the other people because they're already scheduled for May and June and July like we all do with dentistry. You know, we're in there every 6 months or so. So I don't think people are going to go for the let's close for a whole lot longer, and we're kind of seeing that everywhere.
No, we're starting to see people going back to work. I mean, you can only keep people locked up for so long, and then
everybody starts to malfunction.
It's chaos.
Pure chaos. So anyway, that'll be interesting going forward. And another thing, we've been talking to cattle ranchers and stuff around here, and because the processing plants have been closed, you're kind of starting to hear this in the media a little bit, but they're expecting some interruption in the beef production and also pork production, because some of those all those processing plants are closed. So we just, stockpiled a little bacon yesterday just in case, because, you can freeze it. And
we all know
what it's like when there's no bacon available. Everybody starts to freak out.
Yeah, you can run out of bread, you can run out of potatoes, but you don't want to run out of bacon.
Bacon and toilet paper.
Yeah.
So
you can go a long time.
So far, no interruption in toilet paper. We were in Costco yesterday, and it was like the size of a small house in the back there.
Some people hoard silver. You know, that's great, but I'll tell you what, a pound of bacon will get you a long way.
Exactly. The currency of the future is bacon.
Is bacon.
So anyway, just kind of pay attention to that. And if you have a freezer, yeah, you might do a little extra shopping and just lay some stuff in so that you're not, putting a crush on the system.
Yeah.
Leave that for the other folks who didn't pay attention.
Yeah.
People who listen to our show usually pay attention.
Yeah.
And let's see. That is all. You can find all the stuff about our show at wethepeopleradio.us, and we keep giving you that so that you can go and look at some of the data that we post with a lot of these shows. We have a tab up top marked China. We've done a bunch of shows over the last year and a half on China with a lot of supporting information, and many of the things that our guests have told us have been things that just recently came out in the media, although we were talking about it in February. That the WHO was wholly controlled by China. What was the other thing we were just talking about on the break? There was something else that you...
I don't know.
This is your co-host duty, Bill. You're going to get a co-host demerit.
Oh.
There was something else we were thinking about, and Eureka, we'll think of it. But you had told us quite a while ago, and we thought, gee, we're way ahead of the curve here. So you should definitely listen to our program, and then later when you watch the news, you'll be like, oh, I already knew that. How silly. So our guest, Eureka Young, came to the United States from China as a college student in 1988. He works in, Eureka, is it fair to say you work in information technology?
Yes.
Is that it? But you're an engineer. I mean, you're not.
I'm not in, I was involved in information, mostly real-time information technology, so to process, I had been a consultant, an independent consultant for like over a decade or so, and
good for
consulting
you.
On like the streamed financial data and also news profiling, like news, real-time sports news, finance news, and all that. And currently, I'm working with auto, like an insurance company in auto insurance, and this is an industry where it is not severely impacted by the outbreak of the coronavirus, and the companies are in the industry is returning 20% premium for a few months, that we have seen very little car accident, very few car accidents.
Yeah, because instead of miles to get to the gallon, we're going, what I saw one the other day, my car is getting 3 weeks to the gallon.
Right. So the a major expense for insurance companies is like the claims centers that they're paying out. I think I'm with from like those who are in the numbers, like in corporate finance. See, the financial consulting that the clients that I'm working with, they are in macro area. So I do not have any knowledge about corporate finance or micro economics. But I heard from people in the auto insurance company, in the auto insurance industry, they're saying 80% of the company's revenue goes out to pay for claims. And now people are not on the road as much, so they were able to save a huge number of revenue. That's how they are able to return 20% to the insurance buyers.
Nice.
I didn't get that check.
I know. I'm going to make some calls.
Yeah.
It's silly, isn't it? So you're a big picture guy, which is really helpful, especially during a thing like this virus, because there are a lot of people who have specific information about little, segments of it. But it's really nice. That's what I was kind of looking forward to for today, was to get that bigger picture overview. And I'm really curious. I know that you guys had told us, I don't remember, I know there's a loose connection of, I don't know, I always refer to all of you as Chinese dissidents. I know one of you has led me to the next one and the next one and the next one, and so I assume you all know each other. But you've said right along the way that this virus, and I think you had told us this, it has the ability to crush the CCP.
It is really putting the communist regime in a very precarious position. And the divide is seen not only among rank and file, like employees, many who have lost their jobs, so they are not very, they're not very happy with how the regime is dealing with that. And those in the exporting industry who are producing, who are filling orders from foreign countries and foreign companies or joint ventures within the mainland China, they are not very happy, because even if they are not laid off, they are like their pay has been cut and their orders were all gone. And while the government celebrated how successful it is, how bad the European countries, how the United States, what kind of bad shape these countries are in, but these export merchants clients, right? When these countries are not doing very well economically, and then they lose these Chinese workers and the exporters, they lose orders, they lose jobs. So there's this major resentment among.
Oh yeah, it all runs downhill. I mean it.
Yeah,
it starts at the top, works all the way down to the workers, and you can't, at some point you can't hide it.
Yeah,
right. Exactly.
It's almost impossible. We've got to take a really quick break. Sorry, this first one sneaks up on us quickly, but it's not bad to have a little celebration of capitalism. We'll be right back in 2 minutes. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, WeThePeopleRadio.us.
We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along.
and you can actually see the show. I thought that was kind of a fun song for that. You can catch us in Reading on Tuesday nights on KRDT, Channel 23.7 on the American Uncensored News Network. So there you have it. All right, Eureka, back to you.
Yep.
We're burning through daylight here, so sorry. We'll let you take it where you want to go.
you're prompting all the good topics, and they kind of form a natural sequence, like one after another. And we were at where how China's leadership, what kind of a precarious situation they are in, and even the top leadership. We could even see from the outside world that we can see there is apparent divide among the top leaders. And there are those who knew that China is not in a position to challenge the United States and to sabotage the international order, because it's going to hurt itself. If you have all the European countries, they are a huge population of Europeans, when they get infected, they're going to place any orders. And then it's going to impact China as well. And you do not win. You just drag the world down with you. And they started seeing that. And they wanted to try to repair relationships with relations with European countries. And those more outspoken ones wanted to repair relationship with the United States. But the overall guideline from the top leadership, Secretary General Xi Jinping, I think he himself, although is not openly like criticizing the United States, but all the propaganda machines that he is in charge of, they are like spinning. They're spinning out all the rumors and the slanders and all the accusations against the United States. So it is quite clear what he wanted to do. And he knows no economics. He doesn't even know military, I think, or military strategy. But he is the one who wanted to take very bold actions. And this probably would be the only way he could avoid being held responsible by other leaders. So he recently made two trips, one to the coastal cities, and those cities happen to be in the eastern military region, who has long been assigned the task to take over Taiwan. So people outside China observers, they were thinking he could be inspecting those units of PLA soldiers who would be tasked to launch a war if China's economy fails to recover and mounting international pressure for like reparations, right, and things like that. And then his second trip was to even more strategically important location in central China. That's where his father was one of the first generation revolutionaries who took power in 1949, was probably ranked like among the top 50 or so. And that's the central Chinese province of Shaanxi, Xi'an City, Shaanxi, where I went to elementary school for a year and a half before I came to Shanghai. So I'm familiar with those cities and areas and the mountain ridges over there. He visited that a week ago, and in that central Chinese province, it's just mountainous. Reports in foreign media have had it that there are missile sites there, and if there are any, it must be fairly new. Those weren't like the main ones a while back, like 23 years ago. There weren't major missile sites, but I think he went there to intimidate Chinese oppositions, like within Chinese, within communist leadership, he could be facing opposition for his really like aggressive policies toward Canada, toward European countries, toward Australia, toward the United States. And so he wanted to get ready to tell his opponents, like, okay, you may go ahead and try to resume production, right? Resume work and resume school. But if all fails, if they weren't able to, like, start up the economy, or if foreign pressure continues to mount, and a lot of African countries are now accusing China, because we talked about the northern tip of China, where China borders Russia. Then there's the southern province of Guangdong, where there is a huge black population, and a lot of African, a lot of Africans, they somehow got relocated over to that province, to Guangzhou, which is not far away from Hong Kong. And then there were reports that there was an outbreak in the population, which could be 10,000 or more Africans who are sent, who are living in that area. Sanyuanli is the area. And there could be over 1,000, as many as over 1,000 infections among the black population. And Chinese police got used to how they treat Chinese people. We've seen videos like how they treated Hong Kong people, right? So they are treating Africans more or less the same way, though a little less violent, still quite brutal. And a lot of African countries started protesting. Many started reneging, or they wanted to renegotiate debts they owed. And Tanzania, being a typical example, was trying to renege all the debts it owed China, and it wanted to drop out of this Belt and Road Initiative that Secretary General Xi touted as his major diplomatic accomplishments. And Tanzania, the relationship between China and Tanzania went back to the 1970s when the first generation leaders like Chairman Mao and when those were, when I was a kid, I heard about that country. So China helped them build a railroad, and they built hospitals and other facilities. So it had been a friend of the Chinese government for a long time. Now even that country is not happy how China treats its citizens in China. And more and more countries know to judge a regime, a government, or a country, you want to see how it treats its own people. When it treats people in Wuhan, let them die, burn them alive. And then there are cases like I heard from We the People Radio and other dissidents that they harvest organs from dissidents, right? From Uyghurs.
You've done way too many shows on that. I mean, I don't mean that literally. We should do a lot of shows on that. But I consistently speak with people who have never heard of that.
Yeah, and many people they refuse to believe in that, and now. When they were first doing that to Falun Gong practitioners and to other minorities and those prisoners of conscience, people did not stand up and did not voice the concerns. And now they're doing to a larger and a larger population. I believe they're doing a lot to Uyghurs now. And now if we do not stand up for Uyghurs right now, they would be like carrying more terrible things. And they were saying there are about 8,000 Hong Kong youth missing, and they could have been shipped over to Uyghur area, or they could be like kept somewhere. And the people started worrying about their organs being harvested.
Yeah.
Because they're so young, they're only in their teens, right? They're teenagers.
And nobody knows where they are?
Right. And they were just missing. And there was one girl who got swept ashore, a young girl. The video caught her being dragged away from from campus. Then next people saw her swept. Then not only how she died remains a myth, even her parents are now missing. So, because her mother wanted to take interviews, and now her parents are gone. And so it impacted not just young people, but also their families and their other close relatives and their siblings and their schoolmates. So we really need a press. I'm not like really asking the current administration, because the United States has issued orders for all U.S. citizens to come back, to return to the United States. So this is a special phase in our life, and also it's national emergency. But after this is over, if we are back to business, and we really need to protect American interest in Hong Kong. If people are missing, then wouldn't American business wouldn't be safe conducting business in such a city?
True.
And
So
no, and that's I think that's information that.
Well, because the bad part is, you know, we're not used to controlling what we say. We're not really.
No.
Okay, I mean, it's just me. Might be speaking for a few other people, but you know, we're not good at the self censorship only because we don't have to be. It's a when we come back, could you also tie that in with the all the cell phones that we keep hearing about that have somehow magically gone offline? If you have information on that,
okay,
because that kind of ties into people missing in Hong Kong too, I think. Okay, we'll be back with our guest Eureka Young. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Some are steel, some are silk, and some are leather. They're the faces of a stranger, but we love to try them on.
Yeah, so on that unhappy note, does this tie into all the missing cell phones, Eureka?
Yeah, the canceled accounts, running into tens of over like 60 million or so, right? Accounts canceled in the first few months of 2020, and also in the in crematories, people found like cell phones. They didn't burn cell phones. They took it out from off the dead bodies, and they were just piling up. And then there are those transient workers who went to Wuhan, and they ran out of money because people were put into like isolation, and they had to pay their for the room and the board. They ran out of money, so they turned in their cell phone, and they in exchange for food and other necessities. And so there are several explanations. I didn't really go verifying which one. Maybe a combination of all. So one saying goes like the cell phones, the owners of the cell phones, and they were dead, and they died from Wuhan pneumonia. And so their phones like now unattended. And the number they contributed to the total count of drop of a client base of telecommunication companies. That's one source. Then another source was because of a financial strain. They're no longer able to keep multiple phones, so they dropped many phone lines and the numbers. So they dropped that.
Because you have to have a phone there, right? I mean, it's not like a luxury or an optional thing like it is here, where you can have a phone or not have a phone. Is there a requirement that you carry a phone with you all the time in China?
Now, the government wanted to monitor and the surveillance. They thought the surveillance cameras aren't enough, because when you go back to your room, right, the street camera wouldn't catch what you're doing. So they installed apps. They call the health code. Without this code, you won't be able to buy an airplane ticket or train ticket or even board a bus. So you have to have an app installed saying that you are healthy, you are not infected with pneumonia, with Wuhan pneumonia. And before you could, infected by Wuhan virus, before you can go anywhere. Even go to entering a grocery store, check that.
That's interesting, because they want to implement.
They kind of floated that here. Yeah. I wonder where they got the idea.
Yeah, they wanted to implement a program like that here, and I don't think it got very far.
Yeah, pretty quick, and it's kind of convenient for control freaks like the communist leaders. And so they installed this. Now, it is a necessity. It is more than a necessity. You won't be able to make payments. You won't be able to even enter the store without a health code. And it keeps track of where you have been, because wherever you go, they have this like a geolocation chip right in there. So it's not necessarily chip, but whatever the GPS type of, they use maybe a different system other than GPS. So they locate you. And whenever you went to a city, the telecommunication companies know about it. Then they will tell whether you are healthy. A few months ago, if you have been to Wuhan, then you would get maybe a red code. You probably would get a yellow code. Like, people need to be put under observation. Wouldn't get the green code, which would be able to enter grocery stores. So that they are keeping track of people.
Wow.
So this phone, everybody needs to have one. So some couldn't afford more. And then there's a third saying that the military is expanding its recruitment dramatically toward the second half of last year and entering into this year. And when people join the military, like the People's Liberation Army, they need to turn in their phone. They would be using different communication devices, or maybe different service providers with restricted accounts and all that. So these phones, they wouldn't renew their contract. They would just cancel.
Right.
And so these are regarding the drafting and the military enlistment, recent reports came out that it's not quite official yet, but the Chinese government really didn't do that. It is from the new graduates who would be graduating summer this year. They started enlisting among college graduates. In Jiangxi province alone, it is a small province without too many colleges, already over 300 people, graduates, were enlisted. And they would join the army rather than go find a job. There aren't many jobs out there, because of the Wuhan virus.
Sure.
And with over 30 provinces, people estimate it would be 100,000 or so new servicemen and women would be enlisted by the PLA. So this also accentuates the split at the top of the communist leadership. Some are preparing for war. I think probably a war would help him consolidate the power. But many are against, because they would face economic sanctions among the Western countries, from Western countries. And many started expressing, even the princelings, which is a term to categorize the second generation, the children of the first generation leaders. So Xi Jinping, although he is fifth generation leader, he is the son of the first generation revolutionaries. So people of his age, there are more than Yeah, quite a few. Not at least in the hundreds or in the thousands if we lower the rank of the first generation revolutionaries. There are a few thousand, a few thousands of those. They want to distance themselves from Secretary General Xi because they did not want their overseas assets to be like, because if U.S., there's a Magnitsky, I think, act that would hold Chinese government officials responsible for the brutal crimes they commit, like those in Hong Kong, right? There's this, there are these laws that would punish Hong Kong officials who attack students, overuse of police force and all that. Although I don't think United States has got around to do that yet. But they started just on April 18th. They arrested 15 pro-democracy activists in Hong Kong. And I'm glad to see that State Department Secretary Pompeo and other U.S. U.S. officials, many in the Congress, they voiced opposition and they condemned this new round of suppression in Hong Kong. So with the PLA ready to move further into Hong Kong and potentially across the Taiwan Strait, so the tension is pretty high, and that is kind of an imminent threat to the world, and as well as a severe confrontation even within the Communist Party. One other thing related to the labs, there was this deputy minister of public security ministry. His last name was Sun, S-U-N, and he was arrested. He was in charge of the security work of Wuhan labs. And,
oh, whoops.
Yeah, it wouldn't be sure. The media, there was very little information about the cause of his arrest. Either he would be responsible for drawing Western government's attention to that P4 lab, or somehow he didn't guard all the secrets. Someone in the lab, they probably escaped or leaked information out. And his wife, I believe, and his children are probably in Australia. And I've noticed the Australian government has been a staunch ally of the United States in demanding WHO to be more transparent, to tell what it did, how it colluded with Beijing. And Prime Minister of Australia also asked all members of WHO to stand up to demand accountability, to hold Tedros, Director General of WHO, accountable for the terrible spread of Wuhan virus. So these are what's happening in China among its leaders. So the infighting is quite fierce.
Well, just out of curiosity, when they tell everyone, you know, the CIA did it, the American military did it, they've come up with a bunch of stories, when everyone kind of, you know, just doesn't believe them, do they ultimately, I mean, is there a pattern? Do they ultimately just throw one of their own guys under the bus?
They everybody knows that they are lying. Now they have entered this phase that no Chinese intellectuals would even, like, bother holding them responsible. They just spin out one lie after another. Without external pressure, they probably wouldn't throw anyone like under the wheel as a scapegoat. But this deputy minister of public security ministry, he was in charge of the suppression of Hong Kong protests and protesters, and he was sent to Wuhan very early in order to suppress any dissenting views among Wuhan residents.
He's a two-time loser.
The reprimanding of the doctor who died subsequently. Yep. So I'm not sure what his fate will be.
I have a feeling his cell phone's going to be turned off pretty soon. Yeah, that's not good. Yeah. Poor guy. We have to take one last quick break. We'll be back with our guest, Mr. Eureka Young, and you are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. The people in Hong Kong and Taiwan and Singapore and all those guys get to play that song all the time when they want to. So a little programming note. You can find We the People Radio /TV on KRDT channel 23.7 on Tuesday nights on the American Uncensored News Network. Ta-da! Eureka, so you figure the guy that was sent to quell the uprising in Hong Kong and then sent to hush up the Wuhan thing after he flubbed both of those. Has anybody seen him?
Right. Words came out that he was arrested because he was in charge of security. Police, right? They call it the public security forces in China. So Xi Jinping, Secretary General Xi, had to send out secret service, his own, like, palace guards to arrest him. And arrested like close to 100 people on April the 1st, but he did not announce that just in case the son has some staunch supporters. So they waited till April 18th, maybe through some internal cleansing and other preparation work, when all like those associated with son closely were all kind of more or less under control, then they announced it. Mm-hmm. And this person was involved. He was the head of a domestic security task force, which is a very powerful force. He has a lot of power. All the surveillance cameras and all these things that more or less would report to him, all those in charge of surveillance of each municipality, provinces, and districts and neighborhoods. Eventually, he was in charge of the entire web of surveillance within China.
Yeah, it wouldn't be hard to find him, would it? I mean,
not really.
Good soldier has his cell phone on him, and they just come and pick you up.
Within the top leadership, I believe they are playing like a dual strategy. Some are playing soft. They started supplying. We heard fewer stories about defective face masks or testing kits to the United States. They were sending in through air cargo like good quality products over to the United States. So there are those who wanted to try to continue to get along, so to maybe to get to tide over this very difficult period of after the outbreak of the virus and try to get production resumed. But then they have one like playing a nice cop. Then there's the other bad cop, right, who are trying to prepare for war and try to move, to escalate suppression in Hong Kong, despite the arrest of the domestic security boss of that Sun guy. After his arrest, the policy in Hong Kong didn't change, and so this is a this is a moment that where, like, the Western countries in the West probably need stand firm, and so as the rulers in Beijing, especially those more aggressive ones, wouldn't think that it is a good opportunity, right? All the U.S. aircraft carriers have left the area, and they're saying, like, bombers have left Guam and came back to continental United States. So I think I'm glad to see Mark Malley, Joint Chief of Staff, and other DOD spokespeople. They assured American people and American allies in the Far East that United States is always ready, is always 100% ready to defend the United States as well as allies of us. So I'm glad to see that assurance. And those countries, they do need that assurance, and because they're at the forefront. And the bookstore, which triggered this extradition law in Hong Kong, which triggered all the protests, because they want Chinese police, mainland police, they want to come over just to arrest whoever. They arrested the bookstore owner and took him, his last name Lam, the same as the executive of Hong Kong special district, the same last name, but he's the bookstore owner. He was abducted into mainland, and after his returning to Hong Kong, they threatened him. You never go public to talk about how they threatened him back there. But he moved to Taiwan. He reopened his store, and all his books had been, like, sold in advance. People just came, those not yet published ones, people placed advance orders, and those on the shelves were, like, over half were gone the first few days, and maybe just one day, because I thought it would just open. And the president of Taiwan and their, like, legislature, just like their Speaker of House, similar to that title, that Speaker of House in Taiwan, then there's a different title for that, went there to congratulate the bookstore owner for opening up the store. And the president, Dr. Tsai, sent a congratulatory note, and it was displaced. But prior to the opening of the store, people associated with China or sympathetic to communist regime poured red paint on him. So he was showing to the press. I thought it was blood, and then later I learned that it was red paint on his shirt. So people continued to threat him, because the arm of the communist regime extends really far. And after the program, I'm going to send you a link about a piece nicely done by The Economist, a British economics journal, and about international economics. And it gave a lengthy story of how China recruited a U.S. diplomat staff, a staffer on U.S. Working for State Department, who was stationed in Shanghai and Beijing, and how they took advantage of her financial needs and gradually trapped her to providing information to Chinese government. So their hands are extending out really long. And then there's the disinformation about what the United States did. And I believe they have planted a lot of people specially trained, because they talked the same talking points when attacking the United States, when interfering into a midterm election in 2018, now interfering into the general election in 2020. Mm-hmm. They are following same talking points. They're saying, like, they're very quick. As soon as there's some reports here saying, like, President Trump owed the Bank of China 20 million or something like that, 12 million or so, then Chinese media would come out. But here, I saw Breitbart came up with a clarification saying that loan was part of the normal business, and it was that loan had a long time ago been taken over by Wells Fargo, and the Bank of China is like already was out of picture years ago, and that transaction was like 5, 6, 7 years ago when President Trump was a businessman, right, and a real estate developer, and but I don't think you were saying whether China would hold anyone spreading lies and slandering responsible. No, they wouldn't. I'm going to go back and check their state media, see if it ever came up with any clarification that President Trump owes not a penny to Bank of China.
But, oh, yeah.
I'm doubtful that they will even bother.
No, I'm sure they wouldn't. Yeah. And I'm sure our media probably wouldn't spend a lot of time clarifying that either. I mean, it gets back to the fake news. I'm really glad that you're letting our listeners know about some of this stuff, because it's issues that nobody else is talking about.
And if they are, it's like they're not really getting into it, so the people can understand it.
Yeah, it's important to know who we're dealing with here, because it's not quite as rosy as
yeah, so
our
we don't
media
just fall
would.
Back into the same old
exactly,
thing again.
Exactly.
Thank you, Eureka. We really appreciate you coming on with us today, and we will talk to you soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's my pleasure always.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Things aren't always just what they seem. I want to turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I find with you.